Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. Welcome to the program, folks. Today on the radio with us, we have Sharon Finchek, who's the Director of Winemaking at Biltmore Wine Company in Asheville, North Carolina. Sharon, welcome to the Mountain Grapevine Radio Show.
Thank you for having me, Chuck. I appreciate it.
Well, we're very interested in learning as much as we can about you and Biltmore Winery. A lot of our people here in the mountains have been down there maybe once or twice in a lifetime, and been a lot of changes over the years. So let's start off with you. Where'd you come from, and how did you get the job down there at Biltmore?
Well, I originally am from a small town in Pennsylvania named Crescent, which is southwestern part of the state. And I went to the military right after high school, spent some time in Italy, came back to the state, went to school at Penn State and studied food science, and then University of Georgia for graduate school and studied food science and did my research in wine there. And then actually saw an ad in the Wine Country Classified, almost like a newspaper ad, for the job at Biltmore. So old-fashioned way of getting a job, and I applied and interviewed several times and started to work at Biltmore in 1999.
Seriously, I didn't realize you'd been there that long.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I have been here a few years.
I think that's exciting stuff. I've never had a chance to talk to you personally, of course, even though I've spent a lot of time down at Biltmore over the years. Let's talk about some of the kinds of things that you're doing there at Biltmore Winery.
Sure. Well, we take on many different types of projects at Biltmore. Of course, we have a vineyard here on property. We grow Chardonnay, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Merlot. And we also purchase grapes from local growers, mostly in the Polk County area, which is about 45 minutes south of Asheville. So we try to support the local economy and farming as much as we can. And then we also bring fruit in from California and a lot more from Washington recently and sometimes from Oregon.
I know that there's some places up in Oregon that make some outstanding Pinot Noir, one of my favorite wines. That Willamette Valley up there is just absolutely awesome when it comes to producing some nice wines.
It is. And Washington State is actually showing a lot of promise, too, with a lot of their fruit and what they're doing in that area. I'm excited to start working more with. And California, of course, is great. And, you know, in a good year in North Carolina, we have exceptional grapes in this area, too.
I have to ask the question because I have all these people that I'm associated with. Do they make muscadine wine? And I don't have an answer.
You know, we do not. I have done that in the past with a winery I worked with in North Georgia. But at Biltmore, we've decided to only focus on the European varietals. So that's where we're staying focused. So we do not use any muscadine or French hybrids or native grapes at the winery.
Purely vinifera?
Purely vinifera.
It sounds like mostly French vinifera, not Italian or Greek or...
You know what? It just depends. I just call it European generically.
Okay.
But we do have Sangiovese that we make. We make Malbec, you know, which is kind of considered a Spanish grape, although it's really French too. So it's just whatever is trending or popular now, if we can find a fruit source that Bernard and I, the other winemaker here at Biltmore, think is good grape, a good value, we'll try to purchase it and bring it to the winery and, you know, make the best quality product we can from what we get in the United States.
I know from personal experience that the Biltmore wines have continuously improved even in the 9 or 10 years that we've been here. The last time that our French Broad Vignerons had a tasting down there, you really produced some fantastic wines. We were just tickled to death to have a chance to sample those wines. So you're doing a good job down there.
Well, I appreciate that. Continue to drink.
In my age bracket, there's always a problem, you know, with people starting to get a little bit of gray hair. My doctor tells me I should be drinking 2 glasses of wine a day, and I work awfully hard to hold up my end of the bargain on that.
Well, hopefully all of your listeners will do the same.
So let's talk about some of the specific wines that you make. Tell me about what your normal day would be like down there during, this time of year when it's pruning time. What do you do as a winemaker while everybody's out in the field pruning?
Well, we have a production facility here at Biltmore, so we are typically doing sparkling one day a week, bottling sparkling one day a week, or disgorging sparkling one day a week. And the other 3 or 4 days of the week, we're bottling. So to get out what we need to get out for production-wise, we are bottling at least 3 days a week all year long. As a winemaker, my job is getting together all the blends, making sure the wine is ready to be bottled, it's safe to be bottled, doing all the lab analysis, the blending, and making sure our crew in the cellar and bottling are getting the tanks empty to fill back up for harvest. So it's just this continual cycle of right now we're bottling, emptying all the tanks because we're going to have to fill them up here in a few months for harvest.
In the process of doing the kinds of thing you do, let me ask a couple little technical questions just out of curiosity, because most of the winemakers who listen to our show are always curious about these kinds of things. What kind of sterilizing solutions do you use at Biltmore?
We have something called a Gamma Jet, and so basically it's an instrument that will clean the inside of the tank thoroughly, and then of course we use the cleaning chemicals that you would usually use for any winery.
When you actually do the clean out, how do you keep them sterile once you have them cleaned?
It's stainless steel tanks, you know, so once something is clean from that, it should be clean until you're actually filling those tanks back up and empty. We have a filtration system, too, in place, which is mostly your protection. We have, it used to be called a DE filter, but we don't use DE anymore. We use kind of like a perlite substance for that. And then we also have a plate and frame that we put in place. And then we also have conical filters right before bottling.
You do use sulfites in your wine, I assume.
Of course. If we don't use sulfites in the wine, you know, you would have less of a shelf life, more prone to oxidation in the bottle in browning. But there's limitations to what you can use, so I monitor and check that. So we're typically way below that.
Most of us here in the mountains are home winemakers, commercial winemaker wannabes, and a few commercial winemakers here too, as you know, and some of the local wineries. We really are quite curious about how Biltmore does things and how each of us learn from each other as time goes on. But
from the home winemaking standpoint, my best advice to home winemakers is make sure everything is thoroughly clean. The tubes that you use to transfer the wine, I think one of the biggest mistakes that home winemakers make is not properly cleaning or sterilizing their carboys or their tubes that they use to transfer. I mean, once the wine is done fermenting, it's very important that you keep everything full, just like at a larger, like even though our 5,000-gallon tanks that we have, if we don't keep those tanks full, we're going to have a problem. If we don't keep our barrels full when they're aging, we're going to have a problem. And so it's important to continuously top those barrels, make sure that they're full so that you don't have those aerobic bacteria that come in and cause problems in the wine. And also I'm continuously checking for volatile acidity, making sure the sulfite level is 35 parts per million free sulfites throughout the aging process so that you just don't have a problem with the bacteria coming in. If you don't have your tank or your carboys or your barrel full for a period of time, regardless of the winery, you can have a problem with bacteria. So that's one of the critical things that I express to the home winemakers is making sure that you have all those vessels topped off.
You want to make sure there's minimum amount of headspace in the tank.
Yeah, you have to have it full. I mean, you know, once something's fermenting, you know, you have a little leeway because CO2, you know, will protect the wine. You have a very harsh environment for bacteria to grow, but once the fermentation is over, you know, you have to really protect that wine with sulfites and with making sure that it's topped off. You can filter, that's good, just to get rid of the bacteria. Typically 0.45 micron filtration will work, 0.65 micron for yeast, or racking that off to another tank and filling it up with another wine or the same wine if possible will really help to preserve the wine prior to bottling.
In my home winemaking classes at the end of the fall each year, I always tell my people, the three secrets to making really good wine at home is cleanliness.
That is absolutely true, and it just is awful when someone hasn't followed that and their wine turns in a bad way. So I'm constantly checking everything here, During fermentation, I'll take samples every other day, typically. Once it's done fermenting, I'll take a sample at least once a month to check that everything is going the way it should. So a big part of my job here at the winery is making sure the quality is good and that we don't have any problems.
Yeah, the continuous monitoring is a key part of winemaking worldwide. So that's a good idea.
And temperature, too. You know, for home winemakers, if the temperature is higher, bacteria will grow faster. So if you don't have the opportunity to filter your wines, keeping them in a cool place will just help to preserve the wine.
When you get into the season when we start crushing grapes and bringing the grapes to the winery, tell me about a typical day there.
Crazy. Harvest is always fun, and, you know, if you're a winemaker and you don't get excited at harvest, you need to change your job. It's the most exciting time of the year, and you got to be on your A game, and the grapes are coming in. We're getting grapes in locally or from the Biltmore Vineyard. We'll bring those grapes in. We'll crush them here at the facility, send them to a tank. I'll do the initial analysis, make any adjustments that are necessary with sulfites or sugar or whatever that we need, making sure that it starts off good. Because if the grapes aren't good, you're not going to have good wine. You have to make sure that everything is good at the beginning. And then deciding the yeast to put in the particular grapes, whether it's white grapes or red grapes or rosé, and then just monitoring that fermentation. The biggest thing with us is just making sure that the temperature is at the right temperature through that process. We don't want the fermentation to go too fast or get stuck and go too slow. Making sure all that temperature, the glycol is working right, all the chilling is working right is very important during the fermentation process.
We've been talking with Sharon Finchick at the Biltmore Wine Company in Asheville, North Carolina. She's the director of winemaking there, and she's sharing with us some good tips on winemaking and how things go on in her house. We're going to take a break at this point in time, so we'll be right back. Hang on, folks.
Our program today is being brought to you by Sandy Sudbutt's Corn Silk Tobacco Substitute. Most of the folks here in Madison County know that tobacco has gone from our mountain farmers as a cash crop. Farmers all over the county are searching for a substitute, but none so far has been found as an annual crop. Grapes do offer a possibility, but the long-term commitment is something that most farmers cannot afford. Sandy Sudbutt lives back on Laurel Gap and is a third-generation cornpipe smoker. Her doctor finally told her to stop smoking to preserve her health, what health she has left. But Sandy's a determined old gal and never has been able to get more than an hour or so go by without needing to get her corncob pipe lit up and puffing like a steam train. One day she got an idea to try stuffing dried corn silk in her old corncob pipe and lighting it up. It wasn't tobacco, so she knew her doctor wouldn't mind. She says the taste is similar to tobacco with a slight corn taste to the smoke, but without the nicotine and other health-harming smoke components from tobacco smoke. Sandy experimented with many alternatives, but the corn silk was her choice to stuff in her pipe. Over the summer, she tried fresh corn silk, slightly browned corn silk, and totally dried dark brown corn silk. The slightly browned corn silk, just as corn was starting to ripen, tasted the best. She experimented with a variety of mountain herbs to add a little extra taste and interest to her smoking. Her mint patch out back by her pigsty was her favorite. Sandy added a few other wild herbs to her mix, and finally was satisfied she had the best combination. Now she can light up her old corncob pipe and truly enjoy her smoking. It wasn't long before her dad noticed what she was doing. He liked the smell of her smoke, so he decided to give it a try. He was sold on her idea after one puff. Several of her friends tried it and agreed that she should make it available for everyone who enjoyed a pipe now and then. Thus, Sandy Sudbutt's Corn Silk Tobacco Substitute was born. She had her cousin begin making corncob pipes in his corn bin at his farm so Sandy could sell her corn silk tobacco substitute and a corncob pipe as a package deal. It's turned out to be a real trend here in the mountains. Every farmer you see these days is walking around Madison County with a corncob pipe in their mouth. Sandy Sudbutt's Corn Silk Tobacco Substitute is another special product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Sandy Sudbutt's Corn Silk Tobacco Substitute and Sandy's Corn Cob Pipes today at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been talking with Sharon Fencheck on the phone. She's the director of winemaking down at Biltmore Winery Company in Asheville, North Carolina. So, Sharon, just before the break, we were talking about some processing, this, that, and the other, at your place there, and I was curious about what happens to the pomace, the stuff that's left over after you make wine there.
Well, basically what we do is we just put it back on the fields. We have 8,000 acres here at Biltmore, so we can spread it out quite well over that acreage.
Do you do any processing to it other than just take it out of the tanks and dump it on the field? I mean, after the pressing, of course.
No, we don't. We don't typically do anything additional to that.
Roughly how many tons is that in a year?
Depends on the year, actually. A lot of what we get from California, we get as juice.
Sure.
We do get some blueberries now shipped from Washington State. We'll do up to about 150,000 cases this year. So some of it comes as juice from California. A lot of it comes as juice from California. So the white grapes you actually can't ship. Red grapes you can. So we'll ship the grapes that we can ship out of California. And then locally, right around probably 200 tons of fruit.
So 200 tons of local grapes.
Yeah, it just depends on the year, honestly.
Sure. Well, I can understand the variation in that just to looking at where you're sourcing it from.
Here with the cold, who knows what will happen.
Oh, listen, getting enough heat days, as you know, here in the mountains is a little hard.
We'll just have to wait and see. We'll cross our fingers here at Biltmore till we get the grapes at the crush dock.
Well, let's talk about grape harvesting and transportation and so forth out at your vineyard. Do you have these one-ton harvest bins that the people take out in the field with tractors?
We actually have half-ton bins. And, it seems the easiest for us here at the winery. And basically, we request that people try to pick in the morning and then deliver the fruit to us that same day. If they have a capability for refrigerated trailers overnight, sometimes we'll let them pick and then just bring it really early in the morning.
So that's part of the specifications you put out on your purchase. Do you have annual sales contracts that you deal with? How's that work?
It just depends on the vineyard, but typically, yes, it's just on an annual basis. We try not to do too long contracts because it's the weather here in North Carolina is so variable, and you never know what Mother Nature might throw us. Yeah, we typically will have a 3-year contract with folks. And some of the people we've been working with for 20-plus years, so we just have a really long-term standing relationship and a real trust with the growers in that area. It's a really good relationship we have with a lot of the California and local growers.
Well, I think it's important to have a reliable source for your grapes. That's one of the biggest complaints that most people have who are actually buying grapes from other sources to make their wines, is having a good, reliable source that they can count on year to year. And Mother Nature doesn't help sometimes.
No, it doesn't. She can be quite fickle here in the mountains.
Well, let's talk about some of your particular kinds of wines that you're making there. What are your most popular or most productive wines that you bottle there?
Well, we have our on-site cells, which is considered on the property of Biltmore, and then we have our off-site cells. So the two areas, focus on different types of fruit and grapes. So basically, we have our Biltmore Terroir wine, which covers everything from Riesling to Cabernet Sauvignon, and then we have our limited release wines, which are typically only available on Biltmore property. We have our Biltmore Reserve wines, which are our North Carolina wines, our Vanderbilt Reserve wines, which are wines that we actually bottle in California but have control over that whole process, and then we have our Antler Hill wine, which is our highest tier of wines, which are also bottled in California, and we have a whole line of sparkling. So on property, typically, it would be one of our sweeter wines. We have a limited release Chenin Blanc, and then we have a Century Red, which are very popular on property.
Just out of curiosity, can you give me a rough idea of what percentage of your wines are whites versus reds?
The number of red wines have actually increased significantly over the years, and people are wanting more and more red grapes. Basically, when the article came out about health benefits,
sure,
you know, that the production of red grapes and people wanting those red wines increased.
Yeah, that type of publicity has had a serious impact on a lot of the Muscadine wine growers in the state, too. We've, as you know, the Muscadines have, I think, something like 11 or 12 times the amount of resveratrol and other polyphenols that come from the red grapes.
That was great for the Muscadine grape grower.
Yeah, and that has really caused a spur in the sales on a number of our 147 Muscadine wineries across the state. Let's talk just a bit about any of the after-sales support stuff that you folks do there. Do you have any of your specialists who go out and do wine tastings to help the sales along, or is that something you do just at your vineyard? How does that work?
Oh, no. We have a whole team of off-site sales, and we have people that are in Florida, in Virginia, in, you know, all over the place, Ohio. They cover basically the whole Southeast.
Well, I know there's a newspaper article from time to time that says that your winery down there, well, Biltmore, I guess, as the event location, is the most visited winery in the United States.
That is the truth.
Last I heard, that amounted to about roughly 1 million visitors a year.
Well, right around 600,000 to 700,000 visitors will come to the estate. So we have an active audience. A lot of the people that come, obviously, to the winery are coming to see the house, the Biltmore house, and then will come to the winery. But what it, how it serves is that a lot of the people that come here have never even been to a winery before. So Biltmore serves as an educational tool for a lot of those people and the first introduction to wine. So we have several different programs here where we take people through the production process, and they can learn a lot about wine and then are more open to trying it. So that's typically why we have a whole range of dry to sweet wines, so that we can appeal to that first-time consumer and also to the person that's been drinking wine and loving wine their whole life. So that's where we have that wide range of very sweet to very dry wines. If you've never tried wine before, you're probably not going to love a Cabernet Sauvignon as your first choice. Something like Riesling or Chenin Blanc might be more appealing to you.
Yeah, I've spent a fair amount of my time over the years. I'm a cruise ship lecturer. They hire me to come out and lecture on wine regions and all that kind of stuff. And I've also taught classes on wine tasting and wine evaluation at college and universities throughout the country. But one of the things that always stood out to me is most first-time wine drinkers always want a sweet wine. And then as they start to gradually increase their education level and develop their palate, they start moving to semi-sweet, and ultimately many of them become really good, what I call dry wine drinkers. Once they've developed their palate where they can appreciate what it is that they're actually tasting. And it's not just necessarily that southern sweet taste that everybody thinks about when you come down here.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of very famous sweet wines in the world. So just because you like sweet wine doesn't mean it's not a good product. You know, you just have to appreciate the grape for what it is and what it can do. And I agree with you 100%. Typically will migrate from sweet, semi-dry like Pinot Grigio, and then Pinot Noir, and then you'll go to full body cab. Not everyone, but typically that is a transition that happens through the life of a person.
I think it's exciting that you have the, the insight to see that and understand that. I didn't realize you had such an educational component to the activities there, Sharon. I think that's to be commendable. It's a great place for people to learn about wines.
It actually is, and it's when you see the aha moment from somebody that's never really tasted one and truly understanding that it is a science, has a scientific component to it. It is an art. When people make that connection, they're like, wow, you know, this will go great with food, or this enhances my meal. I mean, it really adds another level to that person that's never really enjoyed wine before, or even enhancing the person that loves wine and realizing how much better it can go with the perfect pairing and the perfect food.
Yeah, one of my favorite times in my classes was when we get to see those occasional aha moments. I mean, it's just an astounding, wonderful thing that happens.
You're like, oh, I love this wine. You found the perfect thing for me. I mean, that's what we want to do here at Biltmore. We want to find the perfect wine for the person. And because we have so many different wines, we can typically do that with someone.
Well, the other thing that we always teach in some of our classes is the importance of balance, you know, so you don't have tannin slapping you in the face and one and alcohol slapping you in the face and the other when you're tasting. My wife is a typical example of that. When we first got together, she said, I don't like dry wines. And I took that to mean she didn't never really know what a well-balanced wine was. So I gave her a really good, well-balanced wine one time. She said, oh, that's a great wine. I said, that's a dry wine, my dear. She said, no, no, it can't be. I said, yes, it is. She was astounded. But that's one of those aha moments that I saw personally here some years ago.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great to, you know, really find something that somebody truly, truly loves. And, you know, it's all about pleasing the consumer, making sure we have products to help. And, you know, just wine's a wonderful product. So if we can help people enjoy it, we really want to do that here at Biltmore. And we have a Biltmore Blooms Festival starting here at Biltmore, and we have different seasonal things going on all throughout the year. So we invite all of your listeners to come to Biltmore, try the wines, experience the grounds, come to the Biltmore House. It's a great place to come and visit if you haven't been here before.
What's the best way to sign up to come or get on the website or something to find you folks?
Biltmore.com. If they want to find wine, they can just click on the winery link, and there will be a retail locator there that they can go to and find wines in their local grocery stores or restaurants. We also have a wine club for folks that live far away that they can join and get deliveries several times a year from the winery, some specialty items that we work on just for the wine club. So it's always exciting.
Well, Sharon, we really appreciate your taking time to share with us some of the things that you're doing there today at Biltmore. And I'm looking forward to coming down again sometime this season and tasting what's coming up next for you folks. So thank you very much for your time here.
You're welcome.
We have been talking today on the phone with Sharon Fenchick, Director of Winemaking at Biltmore Wine Company in Asheville, North Carolina. So for today's program, we'll call that a wrap.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!